I wanted to begin with just some technical issues. Every year I intend to take it off, but I always get rushed the last minute and I don't get a chance to correct the packet. There's a little bit of a steer in the packet as to what exactly is on the test. Because the first packet says, well, let me just say what's on the test, and then I'll mention what's not on the test. So what is on the test is, of course, the chaburis, as we mentioned. Even though officially you're required to know all the Maror Mekayim Stevens, and I mentioned on the chaburis, but off the record, even though it's on the record, okay, off the record, we only test on the contents of the chaburis plus the limud atzmi of the Shulchan Aruch with the Noisei Kelim. So in terms of the Shulchan Aruch, so you're responsible for, in terms of Hilchas Hagolos Kelim Kuf Chaf Aleph, Mechaber Moshach Taz Pischi Tshuva, as well as Tofnan Aleph Tofnan Beis in Or Chaim with the Mechaber Amo Mishneh Berurah. What's not on the test, which is listed as being on the test, is Kuf Chaf Beis in Yerideah. It's an important simon. It actually falls through the cracks, because in Yerideah you only go up to Kuf Yud Aleph, and the fourth year Halacha L'Maaseh we're not doing that either, at least as of now. But it is important at some point to go through. It's an important tashlama. It's Hilchas Nosin Tam Lofgan. A lot of it is already covered in Chelek Aleph Yerideah, but there are some halachas. A further elaboration of Stam Kelim Meina Ben Yoman. Does that only apply to non-Jews? Does it apply to Jews? It's a very, very important kolalim. But again, since the chaimer is considerable, we're not going to officially have that on the test. So Kuf Chav Beis, even though it's listed as being on the test, is not on the test. Okay. It's only in Tesn Shemayim, as we always like to say. And in terms of the Tfilas Kelim, so that's just Kuf Chav. Of course, there's no parallel in Or Chaim, even though the Prima Godin and Hilchas Hechsher Kelim has a lot to say about Tfilas Kelim too, but obviously we're not responsible to go through all the Prima Godin. So Kuf Chav in Yerideah, Mechaber Moshach Taz Pischei Tshuva, as well as Reish Beis. Not too much there that's absolutely crucial, but you definitely should go through it. I think we assign the Mechaber Ma'aber Hetev. There are certain klolim there that are more elaborated upon, that are not really elaborated on Kuf Chav. So that's Reish Beis, which is Hilchas Mekvos. So it has more about the halachos of Chatzitza that do not appear in Kuf Chav. Because that's also there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I put that on for whatever reason, but that's not on it. That's not on it. Thank you for mentioning that. Didn't I put it in brackets? Yeah, so that means it's not on it, but I kept it on for whatever. The whole show shows around how these packets got made, but it's not officially on the test. So it's Mechaber Moshach Taz Pischei Tshuva. The gra is always crucial to see, but not for the test. Okay. So the more accurate description of exactly what's on the test is listed in the Tfilas Kelim packet. That has exactly what I just said. In the Hagolas Kelim packet, it discusses Kuf Chav Beis, but that's not on it. Okay, wanted to mention one leftover from Tof Nun Aleph in Hechsher Kelim, even though it doesn't really come up, at least on the American scene, because if you have a broken kli, you usually throw it out. But the Rishonim discuss a concept. It's important conceptually, too, because it's also a carryover to what the halacha of Chaluda is. And that's the halacha of Tlai. In Simen Tof Nun Aleph, try to find the sif as I'm talking. So the Shulchan Aruch discusses, what's the halacha of a kli that has a hole in it and they put a patch on it? So the Shulchan Aruch's psak is basically the patch is going to pose a problem in terms of kashering, and therefore you're not going to be able to remagal it, at least in the regular way, even though the kli is normally used with just the hot water. So I just wanted to discuss a little bit based on the Mishneh Berurah. It's a little bit complex. But there are two different svaras as to why, and as to exactly how the tlai poses a problem. This is a seif yud gimel. And Tof Nun Aleph. Mechaber writes that if you have a patch on top of a kli, the only way to remagle it is to take off the patch and do hagola, or to do libun in the place where the patch is, and it will be insufficient to do hagola there, and then to do hagola on the rest of the kli. So what's the reason over here? So the Mishneh Berurah writes that the Rova Poskim suggests, even though there's no real indication one way or the other from the Shulchan Aruch. But Rav Post can assume that the halacha is like the Rashba. What did the Rashba say? The Rashba says that the problem with the patch is not fundamental, it's just practical, meaning that we're worried that the patch was put on while the kli was still dirty. So if it's still dirty, there might be, in this case, some chametz, and of course the same would apply for shari sorm as well, there might be some chametz or treifus underneath the patch. And as is well known, hagala only works for bliya, doesn't work for ben. So hence, if you're going to do hagala, it's not going to work to be magil, so to speak, the be'en that's behind the patch. So what's going to happen? The be'en will remain there. And then when you cook in that pot, so then the be'en is going to be motzi its tam through the patch into the ochlim that are being cooked within. Obviously, that's more of a problem for Pesach, because it's also even the mashu. But even by Shari Surim, depending on the situation. And, first of all, you might not have shishim depending on the level of the patch, how low it is. And second of all, not all the poskim agreed to the Rashba that lechatchila you could set up a situation, not this Rashba, separate Rashba, that where you know it's going to be bottle, that you could just rely on bittle, right? So that even though it's maybe something a mashu behind it, so it's more a problem for Pesach, but even by Shari Surim, if you're not going with that Rashba, so it would be a problem. So this is the Shita Sarashba, that we're worried about be'en behind the patch. The Rosh is quoted by the Mishnah Brura, identified by the Shar HaTzion, and this is the opinion of some poskim to be choshish for this, because it's a chumrah, meaning it's more machmer than it, that it's a more fundamental problem. You can't have a gala through two layers. You can have a gala through thick metal, but you can't have a gala when there's even the slightest of a gap, because even if it's put straight on, but there's two separate sheets of metal. So the blia that's on this side of the outside side of the pot is not going to be able to go out when you put a patch on the inside side. So this is the Shita Sarosh. So either way, the common denominator is that in order to be magalit, you're going to have to take off the patch, clean it out, and then do hagala with only one layer, and of course removing any bends, that'll take care of both problems. And then, or to leave it as it is and do libun. But there are two nafkaminas between the Shita Sarashba and the Shita Sarosh. And in both of those nafkaminas, the Mishnah Berurah Ikar Adin is paskin lekula, because he paskins like the Rashba. But he shows that there are poskim achoshish of the Rosh, and therefore in those both of those nafkaminas, some would be machmir. What are the nafkaminas? Well, according to the Rashba, they're worried about be'en. So that if you knew that before they put the patch on, you did a good cleaning, so then the patch won't pose a problem in doing hagala subsequently. But according to the Rosh, a cleaning is not going to help. You would have to have done hagala before you put the patch on. But if before you put the patch on, you just did a cleaning, but there's still blia in that area, and the hagala on the inside side of the pot is not going to be able to be motzi from the outside side. And I should say, it's not going to be able to be motzi totally. There'll still be a little bit left, and that little bit left is going to keep going out throughout the course of usage of the pot. So again, according to the Rosh Hashanah, if you're worried about Ben, it would have been enough to make sure to clean it before you put the patch on. According to the Rosh, you're going to actually have to do... it wouldn't be sufficient to clean it before you put the patch on. You would have had to have done Hagala before you put the patch on in order for it not to pose the problem. This is one Nafkamina. The second Nafkamina is, if you choose, having not cleaned it beforehand, not having done Hagala beforehand, and you put the patch on and now you want to kasher it, so the Shulchan Aruch says either take the patch off and do Hagala, or do Libun on that area. What kind of Libun? So we learned earlier, if the only reason you're doing Libun is in order to get rid of Be'en, at least if you're applying the fire directly onto that spot, so it's enough to do Libun Kal. So according to the Rashba, that patch would only have to be fired up to the degree of Libun Kal. But if you're going with the Rosh, that Hagala is halachically ineffective on a double layer of metal, so the substitute for Hagala is also going to be halachically ineffective on a double layer of metal, and we know that Libun Kal, outside of its properties of being able to burn Be'en, is basically just a substitute for Hagala. So according to the Rosh, you would need Libun Chamor on that area. So the two nafkaminas, again, Mr. Rupas can make it in like Rashba, but points out Poskim Amachmir for the Rosh. Besides the Limud in theory, but I just note that Rabbi Neuberger mentioned that there's a parallel machlokus concerning the need for removing chaluda. which is a Gemara, of course, in Avodah Zarah and the Sifrei and Parshas Matos. Ach es hazahov. I mean, it has to be just the gold. I mean, you have to remove any kind of chatzitza, even for a gola, right? But also rust. What is the reason that you're removing rust? So here too, we have machlokus, which is not as like Tolis Ebezet, but a very parallel type of machlokus, where the Mishnah Brura quotes that we're worried about be'en, that's somehow in the crevices of the rust. And the Sefer Tefilas Kelim, I think Rabbi Neuberg quoted this too, points out that it's very fascinating because the Mishnah Brura from the Achronim quotes they're worried about be'en. But the Rishonim happens to be the Rush, so it's almost a Shitaso. The Rush says, no, we're worried about the fact that Hagala can only work on direct metal, but if you have metal that's rusted, it's not going to be able to affect the underlying metal. We're not worried about the be'en, we're worried about the effectiveness of the Hagala. So of course, that also has an afkamina in terms of what if you have a very smooth kind of rust that where you know and you see that there's no way there's anything in there. So if you're just worried about be'en, presumably it shouldn't be a problem. If you're worried about the effectiveness of the agal, then it would be a problem. And I think Lamaisa there, I think we are choshish for that. That even if, let's say Rabbi Neuberger spoke about the dishwashers, that if the plastic comes off and there's a rust, it might be a problem. Just check if there's be'en there. So it sounds like the halacha, we're choshish for the rust, at least over there. Again, it's not necessarily shitaso, because you could distinguish between rust and at two layers, but it's very fascinating parallel issues. Within that regard, it's important to mention, this is the consensus, I think there are machmirim in this too, but regardless of what the reason is for chaluda, the Mishnah Brura already points out that a mare of chaluda alone is not a problem. There's no mamashis to it at all. It's just, it looks brown. So that's not going to be a problem for either one. Again, because both svaris are okay with that, because there's no be'en, and since it's equal with the metal, so you can't really call that anything significant. It also is relevant to sometimes black imperfections you have in metal. And I thought, I'm hesitant to say this, because I have a fresh inside, but I would have thought the same should apply to tarnish on silver. There's no mamushes to it, it's just different color. I'm hesitant to say that because I have to double check with the one I heard it from, but I heard one of the Rabbanim Yeshiva was Machmer, and that's I'd like to double check. But at least from what I saw in the Mishnah Brura, I thought that just tarnish should be the equivalent of just the color of rust, and therefore, at least be the Eved shouldn't be a problem. Maybe Lachalchila, it's a good idea to take it off, but since he could with silver polish, you can't really take off rust if there's only a Mare, right? But you could take off tarnish, but that it should be Ma'akev de Hagala. I thought that was difficult, but again, I don't have a fresh what the Sfarim say on that, so I leave it as an open question. But I just wanted to raise that issue. There's a big nafkamina for kashering kiddush cups for Pesach, even though that itself is a chumrah. They have to be makbid to make it, crystal shiny silver before you magal it. Yeah.
But even according to the Rush, it's just metal. It's just nothing that's impeding the hagala.
You mean the tarnish?
Right.
Yeah. So
by the chaluda, there's something there.
Right. So that's what I thought. I thought misvara that the tarnish should be like a mare chaluda, which the Mishnah Brura says is going to be good. It sounds like according to everybody. Again, it's interesting. The Mishnah Brura, though, he quotes both opinions over here, like Abbe Tlai, but he doesn't quote both parallel opinions, even though they might not necessarily be totally zebezeh. Concerning chaluda, he only quotes the chashav ben. Okay. So just a little leftover from Hagola. Now let's just mention, for the first year Rabbi Neuberger actually mentioned in Shir, so we can go a little more quickly in this. That was the last topic in Shir. This is the transition between Hagolah and Tefillah, and that it concerns the order. The order of Hagolah and Tefillah. And what do you do first? So this is actually mentioned in Kuf Chaf Aleph, even though it's really more relevant to Kuf Chaf. Kuf Chaf Aleph is base, so the Mishnah in Masechta in Avodah Zarah, when it discusses all the various forms of Hechsher, and elaborated upon by the Gemara, so it discusses either Libun or Hagala, etc., and then it says Matbilan. So the order of the Mishnah is first Hagala, and then you do Tevila. Which is, of course, parallel to the Diukim and the Psukim, because it speaks about Achet Zav as a Kesev, Taviro Be'esh, etc., which is a reference to Libun, Hagala, etc., and it says Vitoher, from which the Gemara derives that that's an extra Tahara, and that's referring to Tefillas Kelim. So the order of the Psukim is also Hagala following a tefillah. So the question is, though, is that ma'akev? That is l'charchila, at least according to Rov Rishonim. I don't know if anyone says lav dafka legamri, but certainly l'halacha, we say that is l'charchila. The question is b'di'evid. What if you switch the order? So the Shulchan Aruch quotes 2 days. The first day is l'kula, which sounds like, since he quotes it stam, that that's his ikar opinion, that if you did tefillah first, it's good. And the second day, which is the opinion of the Rashbam and other Rishonim, is that it's even b'di'evid, you have to do, if you did tefillah then hagolah, you got to do tefillah again. So just lahalacha, the shach paskins lachumra that you should do tefillah again. Presumably, as Rav mentioned, that's based on the fact that we paskin that tefillah's kalim is a deraisa against perhaps the mashmos of the Rambam, and therefore it's a suffix on a deraisa whether you yotze the tefillah. So you tovel it again without a bracha. Pesachei Tshuva quotes from one of the other, one of the lesser known Tshuvas for him, the Yeriosa Ohel, that sounds like you should be even tovel it again with a bracha. So we don't paskin like the Yeriosa Ohel. Paskin like the Shach, that you tovel it again without a bracha. Of course, that's only relevant for, presumably, got to check on that, but presumably it's only relevant for non-Jewish Kalim. What do I mean? You could have a situation where you have old kalim that, for whatever reason, were not tovilled, and they became treif. So, l'chayra, I guess it's a sword the other way too, but l'chayra there, all you need to do is tefillah, and then you could do hagala afterward, because you're not being magalit from stuff that went in al yidei ha'akum. But whatever, that might be dependent on all the svaras. Anyway, there are svaras l'kan l'kan. I'm sorry? Yeah, let's say you have a Jewish kli. You bought from a non-Jew. It wasn't. Now it's Jewish. You bought it from a non-Jew, but you never did the tefillah, and now it's old. And by the time you got a chance to do tefillah, you succeeded in trafing it up. So do you have to do hagala first in that kind of situation? So I would think not. I think it's only when the dublia went in al yidei akum. But again, that might be totally on the source. There's a lot of lumdas here. You already alluded to a lot of having written. Rabbi Neuberg also discussed what the svaras might be back and forth, because Rishonim used the term, don't those are machmir, he used the term sheretz biyado, tovel v'sheretz biyado. So the question is, why should this be a sheretz with respect to what you're doing here? Blia doesn't make a tummy, and after all, you're not really being tovel because tummy anyway. It's tumas ha'akum, it's like bringing it into Kedushas Yisrael. The language that we've shown him is like a gerus of sorts. Like you megayer people by putting them in the mikvah, so you megayer kalim by putting them in the mikvah. It's the analogy that we've shown him give. So why exactly is this a sheretz? So we're just going to leave that discussion, but it certainly is a rich discussion in the achronim as to how exactly to be magdar is machlokis and what exactly is the nature of that sheretz. But what we have here is two very important machlokisin within how far do you take that idea of sheretz biyado, meaning assuming that it is a problem to be tovel a kli before hagala from that became treif in the hands of the akum, because it's like tovel a sheretz biyado. So how far do you take that notion of a sheretz? So the shach quotes from the Rambam quoted both of these briefly. I just wanted to review. The shach quotes from the levush, the aterazov, that it depends on what you want to use the kli for. So, we didn't mention this in terms of Hilchas Hagolas Kalim, but it's relevant here as well. That the halacha is that you're allowed to, b'ofen arai, use a kli for tzonein, even if it's treif. If the mechaber sounds like you can use it for tzonein all the time. But the Ramah is concerned, I think quotes in the Mordechai, that we're worried that if you're going to use it b'tzonein, b'ofen keva, then you're going to forget, and you'll ultimately use it for hat, and you're going to make your food treif, or at least going to use a kli that's ain't a binyomo, and l'chachili can't use it. But b'ofen arai, once in a while, say you go to a hotel, and they have whatever, treif plates. Moz machmir.
But even,
he's not machmir b'ofen arai. He's not machmir. You look at Ramon Sifei in Kuf Chafalif. It says you're allowed to use the b'ofen arai for tzonin. But not b'ofen kavua. Well, first about Hagala. No, not without. We'll get to that later. I don't know if Rabbi Neuberg quoted yet. He said, there's no such idea as you could use a kli once without tefillah. That's wrong. We'll see where the mistake comes from. But But you could use it, whatever it's called, arai. I think some say once in 30 days, without hagala, bitzonin, because it's not going to be boleya. Of course, you can't keep it there for 24 hours. So, what's the halacha, says the Atar Zav, if you want to use this kli for tzonin, and it has bli in it from trey from the goy, and you weren't tovel it either. So let me be tovel it now to use for tzonin, and then I'll use it for tzonin, and then at some point I'll be magal it so that I can use it for chamin too or for tzonin baofen kavua. So the Shach says that's okay, because at the time you were tovel it, the sheretz was not relevant because using it for tzonin. So, but it's lingering there, legabe chamin. So, we have a notion of a relative sheretz. Right? Now, it's only a problem with respect to chamin, and heyos, that's not what you want to do with this kli right now. So, it's not relevant. It says the Atar Zav, well, once I sealed the deal and I already got it to the mikveh, ba'ofen ha-kosher, so now, even then, when I want to use it for chamin, I don't have to be told it again. It's a chiddush. So we can understand why some other achrayim are machmer against this. That's quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva in the name of the Tiferes Lamoshe. He also crept up a little bit in Hilchos Mila too. And he argues, he says, no, sheretz is a sheretz. You got to go by the whole ishtamshus of the kli. So since you could use the kli for chamin, it's called a sheretz with respect to the chamin. Tashma, he doesn't give the svara, but I'm just filling in the svara. I assume something along those lines. So you wouldn't be able to pull that trick. That's machlokas number one. Go ahead. That's correct. When I switched to the discussion of tefillah, I meant where you bought it. When I was discussing going to a hotel, I was just giving an example of where hei chatimtza of using it both in a rai would be, and you're right, then you wouldn't need tefillah either. Yeah, so you had a glass bowl in the cabinet in a suite or something, and you want to put some cereal in it. Aye, but they probably the previous might have put the pork soup in it or something. So, but it's open a rye, as long as it's clean. But you're right. This would only be relevant if you bought it. And then the Dogma Ravava, also quoted by the Pesachei Tshuva, it's also on the side as well, independently, holds that an Eina Ben Yomo is not a sheretz. Rabbi Neuber quoted that as well, because it's not going to make anything usher. I'm sorry. I don't know. Maybe the Chassam says it too. Here's the Dogma Ravava. So that's also debatable. Even though on the page they don't quote anyone who argues on that. Again, the Dogma Ravava says after 24 hours you could be tovel at first, according to everyone, because there's no sheretz that's going to answer it. And Sefer Tefillos Kelim quotes from the Darkei Tshuva, quotes a collection of Achorim arguing that too. So that might get involved in what the nature of the sheretz is, and also what the nature of Eina Ben Yomo is. Could have two fronts to argue on that Dogma Ravava. So either way, there's an interesting machlokas as to how far you take the sheretz. So the Derech HaMelech, of course, to be magel first and then be tovlet. We don't usually do that because we're buying new kelim. But if you buy old kelim, so that's relevant. Good. So that's a transition between tefillos kelim and between extra kelim and tefillos kelim. I wanted to begin backwards. It's not backwards in the Shulchan Aruch, but it's backwards in terms of the order of the Sefer Tefillos Kelim. It's also backwards in terms of general of topics. But I wanted to begin from the Maisa Tefillah. And the reason I want to do that is because that's not covered at all in the Chaburis. Much of what we'll be covering was already at least touched upon, if not elaborated upon, in the Chaburis. This is something that's not really covered at all, so I wanted to begin with that. So in the Mechaber, in Sif Aleph and Sif Beis, describes the fact that Tefillos Kelim Avli has to be done in a kosher mikvah, that's kosher for Tefillos Nida. And interesting debate, which lahalacha, we have a clear psak on that, as to if you're dipping it in a mayan, whether you need 40 sar or not. But anyway, lahalacha, you do. So we'll just leave it at that. But it might have an afkamin in terms of the nature of Tefillos Kelim, but it's in theory. In practice, you always need 40 sar of rainwater or of a natural spring water. And you have to somehow arrange to put the whole kli in the mikveh. So this is pointed out by the Pesachei Tshuva in Sifkat and Gimel. It's interesting that it had to await the Chochmas Adam to clear that up, but I guess everyone else took it for granted, that you have to put the whole kli in the mikveh. What's the havmina not that way? Every tefillah works that way. If a woman goes to the mikveh, even one hair is going to passel the tefillah. If a man goes to mikveh, same thing. And for tefillahs, kelim mituma, real tumma, tumas meis, tumas sheretz, of course it has to go in the mikveh totally. So apparently there would have been a havamina that since tefillahs kelim is more in yoredeya kashrus chelek, not yoredeya, we're not in hilchas tumma v'tara. Even tefillahs need that. It's wears two hats. It's a tumma v'tara halacha and het labayla halacha. So one might have thought that tefillahs kelim is like hagala. And Haggalah, I don't know if you mentioned it, but you could theoretically do lachatzoin, right? If the utensil can't fit in totally, so you do a dip and take a double dip, because you've got to be machshir everything. You might have thought maybe tefillah too. So the Chacham says no. This follows the pattern of tumah v'tahara. Everyone agrees to that. It's just adding in what might have been a havamina fakert. Why even have to bother pointing it out? I think there's a Ramban. I forget where. I just saw. I was chazering over for the chabura. I think there's a Ramban who points out explicitly in Masechta Avodah Zarah that so you already have Rishonim that idea. But again, it's the silent assumption. No one ever said otherwise. So that would mean that when you have a very big kli, you have problems in industry. You know, it's either get your crane and put it in the ocean, or find out some other idea. You know, it's in industry. You know, it's enormous vats if they're owned by Jewish proprietors and hotels, etc. So you have to think of an Eitzah. So the different eitzes to post can use. Maybe we're going to mention some of them later, but you can't just dip it piecemeal.
What about a big kli made of separate pieces that were like screwed or nailed together?
Yes, can you take it apart? So I think the Svarim say you can.
Even if you don't take it apart, then you like dip half and the other half?
I think the post can say the only eitzah you have there is to take it apart and dip it separately, and you could do that. They base it based on a sugi in Masechta Sukkah. About a mita, that you could, the machleik is between the Chum and the Behuda, whether you have to be told the whole mita together, or you can be told chelek chelek. But since we're paskin like the Chumim, that you could be told chelek chelek, so they suggest that maybe here you could do that too. Could have been machalik. You could have said there's halach and klisuda, it's not a klisuda unless you put it together. But I think the post can assume that you can. That would be an eitzah, but a lot of kelim are not made that way. Okay, so let's go to the maisa tefillah. So in Sif Beis, the problem that Sif Beis is trying to address is that the standard way of dipping a kli, the standard way we dip kelim now is with a basket. That's also an eitzah, but more direct ways. You take your hand, you pick up the kli, put it in the mikvah. The obvious problem is that you didn't get that spot because the hand is touching the area there, and the mikvah water is not going there, and it's not going to be good enough to take it out of the mikveh and then shift and then dip it again, because it has to be all at once, the whole kli of the mikveh simultaneously. And it's not going to help to slide your finger over in the mikveh. It's the same problem, because all of it has to be in the mikveh water all at the same time. Actually, if you somehow manage to do that, it actually might work. We'll see in a second why. But you certainly can't take it out and shift and then put it back in. So how do you solve the problem? So this already was raised to some extent in a Mishnah in Masechta Mikvos. It's Mikvos, right? And the Rambam quotes the Halacha, the Shulchan Aruch is quoting it over here. Yeah, it's a Mishnah in Masechta Mikvos, Perches. So Machlok is between the Tanakam and Rav Shimon. I mentioned the Mishnah because there's a Shach over here that you need to know the Mishnah in order to appreciate the Shach. So the Chachamim say the Eitzah you use is you wet your hands. Madiach is Yadov, is the language of the Mishnah. And this way, you solve the problem. We'll get to the details of that in a moment. The simple pshat is you go to the water faucet and you wet your hands, or you dip your hand in the mikveh, either way. But the bottom line is you take your hand out of the mikveh, so now it's mayim tlushim. And then you hold on to the kli, you dip it. Reb Shimon says, yarpis yodav. You should hold it very lightly. So there's a machloikis rishonim, how to interpret the machloikis tanoim. The Rambam learns that the chachamim are arguing on Reb Shimon. And they hold that holding it lightly is not good enough, because we're worried that you're going to hold it tight. You're afraid it's going to drop, or if you're dealing with a human being, let's say an older woman, that you're afraid she's going to fall, so you're going to hold her tight. And so therefore, according to the Rambam, only eitzah number one works. You have to wet your hands. But Rav Yishayim say that the Chachamim are being makel over Reb Shimon. They're holding that both techniques work. And it's Reb Shimon who's being machmir and saying that it's not sufficient to wet your hands. Oh, one second. That Reb Shimon is being machmir and saying it's not sufficient to wet your hands. You actually have to hold your hands loosely. So since we're passing like the Chachamim, according to that approach, both Eitzos are good. You could either hold it loosely, Yarpis Yadav, or you could wet your hands. The Shulchan Aruch paskins like that latter view, which is the majority opinion that we've shown him, that the Chachamim are accepting the view of Reb Shimon and being more Mekel. The Shach, however, wants to be Choshesh for the position of the Rambam, and therefore disallow Yarpes Yadav. Interestingly, similar discussion comes up in Hilchas Nida, whether or not we should be Machmir for the position of the Rambam, even though the Shulchan Aruch is consistent, that he's Mekel there too, and here he's Mekel as well. But the Shach points out, but over there we are Machmir, the Bach is Machmir, and other Achroinim are Machmir for the Rambam, so we should be Machmir here too. So some Achroinim, starting with the Pischei Tshuva quotes them, well, quoting earlier sources, Sivkot Nehei, points out, either because Nidas and Issacharis, so a more Machmir, even if, so we choshesh for the Shittas Rambam there, but not here, it's not in Issacharis. And furthermore, even though it's an Issa Deraisa, or it's a mitzvah deraisa, so it feels kalim, but hayois that b'di'eved, the kli, the food will be mutter, anyway, so we don't consider that as chomor. So that's why we're in machmir here. Anyway, it's really all in theory, because the psak, the ikar psak, and the shulchan are consistently, is that we're not choshesh for the shittas Rambam. But the shach is concerned, how come we shouldn't be machmir, just like the bach was machmir, but I need to make sure machmir here. So the achroin and try to miyashev a split. So halach l'maisa, some achoshesh shach, some aren't. Whether or not in the latest forum, Tvios Kalim, the Chelkis Binyamin, some are machmir not to just be marpes yodav, but to rely dafka on somehow wetting the hand. Then we have to discuss that too. Yeah.
Sorry,
go ahead.
What's the Rambam's opinion?
The Rambam's opinion is that the Chachamim are arguing on Rav Shimon, and therefore they disagree with the Eitza of holding it loosely. The only Eitza that's going to work is wetting the hands. And it's not negating the basket, which is a whole different kind of Eitza. But if you can hold it in your hands, you have to wet your hands first.
The Rambam was referring to Tiglat Kelim,
was it? The Rambam was referring, I think, to Nida, but I think to Nida and to Kelim. Well, the Rambam is actually in Hilchos Mikvos. He's talking about all things you're putting in the mikvah. He was not specifically referring to Tzvilas Kelim. It's not a Rambam in Hilchos Machlos Asuris. It's a Rambam in Hilchos Mikvos. Presumably, the Rambam would carry it over to Tzvilas Kelim too, because for the Rambam, it's fundamental. It's not just Achshash, Sheva Chumra.
The Rambam mentioned the Rambam holds his view as a
Yeah. Maybe. But once he paskins that... maybe we're not going to have the chshash by the Rabbanan. It could be. It could make a case to maybe Rambam cave in here too. So maybe that'll be another issue you're saying. Maybe that's why the Mechaber wasn't Machmir. Okay. So we gunned away a little bit at the eights of holding it loosely, because the Shach said no good. That Rova Postman said is good. Now let's gun away a little bit at the other eights. So it's nice, smooth Shulchan Aruch here, but by the time we're done, everyone shoots down all these Eitzes. They said, don't do any of these. Do something else. What's the other Eitzah? So wet your hands. What does that mean, wet your hands? So here we have three Shittas within what it means to wet your hands. The simple view, which is the view that is the Mashmaos of the Rosh, is pointed out by the Taz, as well as the Gro goes this way as well, that wet your hands mean wet your hands, meaning that's it. No other requirements to that. So what does that mean? You wet your hands in the water faucet, or you wet your hands in the mikvah water and then take it out, either way, because it's the same equivalent. You're not gaining anything by using mikvah water and taking your hands out, because now it's like the sink, because you took it out of the mikvah. It's not in the mikvah anymore. And then you could hold on as tight as you want, and then you dip it. What would be the lumdus of that? How is it working? So let's backtrack a bit. When you hold it very loosely, how is it working? The way it's working is that since you're holding it so loosely, the mikvah water will swish into that area. So it's pashit the way it works. It's mikvah water. But when you wet your hands and you hold it tight, how does that work? Because it's not mikvah water. And for that spot that you're holding on, it's not mikvah water. So that works with hashoka. Because the mikvah water is mischaber to the water that is between your fingers and the kli. Ah, but you're holding it so tightly, so you're not letting it be mischaber. So I think, if you look carefully in the Taz and the Gro, I think there are two svaras as to why it works. Either because all you need is a chut asayra connection. I'm not familiar with all of Hilchos Mikvos. I don't know when a chut asayra is good enough, when you need a shafer sanod. I don't know, but the Shach quotes, the Taz quotes, in this context, all you need is a Chut HaSayra. So, Mestam, a Chut HaSayra you'll have, even with your tight connection. And the Gruah makes it sound like, you don't need it, that's halacha. If you have water here, in between your fingers, and you have mikvah water surrounding, so that's called, like mikvah water. That, halachically, it's called connected, even if there's no actual chibur. That's what it sounded like from the Gruah. I'm somewhat hesitant to say that, because, again, I'm not a Boki by any stretch of the imagination. I don't know exactly the lumdus, but it's clear from the Gruah and the Taz that Shita number one holds that there's no limitations to how tight you hold it. That's Shita number one. And that's the simple reading of the Mechaber, because if he held otherwise, he should have said so.
But all the chumras of Hashaka and Hakon, like Zuriya and all that, I'm saying, like, how you're holding it on the side or on the top, like.
What do you mean?
Are we mamish going to apply all the chumras of Hashaka now?
Well, there are two ways to make a mikvah. There's Hashaka and Zriya, right? So this will be working with one or the other. You don't need both. And we're machmer mikvahs to do two kinds of things, right? To do Zriya by putting the water in and letting it overflow and having another bore. But the pashtus, either one works. So how, I don't know exactly how this is working. Is it halacha Hashaka, halacha Zriya? I don't know. But the bottom, halacha, even a tight hold works. The Taz, I'm going a little bit backwards, so I think logically it works out better this way. The Taz quotes in the Mordechai, and this is his reading of the Mordechai, and it's also the position of the Rashba, that you can't hold it very tight. Because if you hold it very tight, there's no chibur between the mikvah water and the water between your finger and the kli. So obviously it doesn't mean you're holding it very loose, because that's the other Eitzah. Then I don't need water, right? I could just take a dry hand and hold it very loose. That's Eitzah number one. So they have a new idea. They call it Dibuk Beinani. It's not very tight, not very loose. It's not loose enough to allow the mikvah water to swish around directly, but it's not so tight to prevent the lachluchis on your hands from being meschaber to the mikvah water. That's the way this Eitzah works. This is the psak of the Mordechai, according to the Taz understanding. The Gruah also, at least in one shot, understands the Mordechai to mean that as well. And it also is the position of the Rashba, as I mentioned, in, I think, at the end of the Torah Sabayis, we discussed the Mikvos. Now we have shot number three. Shot number three, which seems to be the understanding of the Ramah in the Mordechai, and also the Gruah suggests this in one shot in the Mordechai, is that no, the Mordechai understood that even a Dibuk Beinani is not going to work. So what then did the... Well, if it's totally loose, so then you're back to the first Eitzah. The Mordechai understands that when the Mishnah says, Bimadiach es yadav, it doesn't mean wet your hands and then take it out or wet it in the faucet. It means you dip your hand in the mikvah. Madiach es yadav, meaning you stick it in the mikvah. That's why the Gruah notes that that's what Madiach means. That means Samus is Toivel es yadav mikvah. So that's why he just doesn't like this pshat. You dip your hand in the mikvah, and then you put the kli in. So now, by the time the kli touches your hand, so the water that's between your hand and the kli is mikvah water. So nothing to talk about. You know, Ashoka, it already was mikvah water. Never came out of the mikvah. And that is directly parallel to the famous Mishnah Nida that says that when, let's say, you're a tall man, and you're going into the mikvah, and your feet are touching the ground, and then you lower your head in, so you don't have to jump. Mishnah doesn't actually put it that way. It speaks about a bed, but it's the same idea. Right. I remember when I went to the Rizal's Mikvah in Tzfat on a teenage tour, so they said, you got to jump. So now I learned a little more. It's not such halacha. You don't have to jump. Because you have a chibur of between your feet and the floor of the mikvah. It's mikvah water.
Is that why women need that too?
I don't know what they're machmah for in the mikvahs. I don't know. But it would be the same halacha, yes. I don't know. Did the mikvah ladies tell them to jump? I don't know.
So,
doesn't say, right? It says fakert, you don't have to.
It says not to.
I mean, better not to, because otherwise you'll crease up the body. Okay, even better. So so that's shot number three. Of course, that's the most machmir, because that means that wetting the hand is not good enough. So how do we paskin? So Moshe Feinstein writes in a Tshuva Chelik Beisim Pehei, we paskin with the Shulchan Aruch. The simple reading. You wet your hands, and that's it. I think I saw from this farm, I think he passed like the Rosh's version, like the Gruah. You could hold it as tight as you want. But the latest farim, the Tfilas Kalim book, and the Chelkis Binyamin, So they are choshesh for some of these extra chumers. So some are choshesh for the dibuk beinani, and some are even choshesh for the extra chumra that you should put your hand in first. So another twist on that, not putting your hand in first, is the following etzah. Because it's not as convenient to put your hand in first, unless it's a big kli, whatever. So it's a double dip, but not a double dip of a kli, because that doesn't work, we said. It's a double dip of your hands. You stick your hand in, dry or wet, doesn't matter. Okay, now the kli's in. But it's a pasul of tvila, because there's a chatzitza there, or maybe a possible chatzitza. Then you stick your other hand in. So when you stick your other hand in, so now your other hand is now getting wet with mikvah water that never left the mikvah. And then you grasp onto the kli. Then you let go with the first hand, and now you have a totally kosher tefillah because everything's surrounded in mikvah water, and then you take it out. That's what the Taz quotes in the name of the Yisav Heter, that you go miyad liyad. Yeah, it's like a different version of that. You could put both hands in, and then, you know, one holding the kli, one not, and then you flip it into that one. It's the same idea. So that was like the most mahadrin. But you don't necessarily need all of that. And of course, nowadays, it's mostly in theory, because most people in the mikvos, especially some of the mikvos have rules, they don't want you to do these eitzes, because they don't want it to fall down. So they use a basket. So the basket is also a good eitzah, because the basket is going into the mikvah, so any water there is getting all mixed up with the mikvah. And it's surrounding totally by mikvah water, and you don't need a halacha vashaka or anything fancy and anything. And therefore, that's also certainly a valid means of a tefillah. So here, parenthetically, we know the difference between tefillah and hagala, that concerning tefillah, as long as all the kelim are nice and loose and rolling around, you don't have to worry if they're touching. Right? So you have silverware, as long as you're not putting in a ton, you don't have to worry so much that the fork should be exactly laid out straight in the basket, because as long as there's a good movement, so the water is going to swish around. That's the equivalent of rafui. But if you have a ton, you don't want to fill up the basket if you're a caterer with 1,000 spoons, then dip it all, because then it's not necessarily going to swish around properly. If you have a heavy pot, so on and so forth. So to use your seichel to see whether it's going to get there or not. And that's not like Hagala. We didn't mention that last time. Tofton Bay says explicitly that you don't want two kelim to touch during Hagala. Because there we don't just want water there, we want the koyach harasichus to get there. So there you need them. They should not touch during the Hagala processing, at least at some point during the Hagala processing. I'm sorry?
First dipping in the hand at all. Being put
but that's just practical. No. What the eights I gave was not that you dipped your hand first. You took, you held the kli with your hand, and you dipped it in. That's just to get it into the mikvah. There's no halachas of that. But I have a problem because the water that I have between my fingers and the kli maybe is not going to be good because I'm holding it tight, or maybe there is no water there because I never even dipped my hand originally. Then I stick in the second hand, and now because now it's already in there, something's holding it, so now I'm able to afford to have this hand freestyle, get mikvah water on it, and never leave. Then I grasp the kli with mikvah water, I release the first, then take it out.
I meant
you hold the kli, dip it in, and put the second hand in, and hold the kli, release the first, then take, and after you release the first, then only then take it out.
I can't take the first hand, just dip it, just dunk it in, take it out, then take the kli.
That's the simple reading of the Mechaber, but we pointed out that there was a mafakbek on that simple reading of the Mechaber, because the Rashba required dibuk beinani in that case. And one reading of the Mordechai, which seems to be the Ramah's reading of the, again, the language of the Ramah is you wet your hands with mikvah water. So the Gro asks on the Ramah's reading, what do you mean you wet your hands in mikvah water? You wet your hands in mikvah water, take it out, it's not mikvah water anymore. So the Mati Hainison explains that what the Ramah meant, and that seems to be the way the Taz took the Ramah also to mean that, the Ramah meant, no, not that you wet your hands in mikvah water and take it out. You wet your hands in mikvah water and keep it in. You know, put your hand in, and then put the kli on top. So Hayyos that the Ramah was super machmer in that, that's why those are choshesh for that Ramah. So to be yotze that Ramah, you can either stick one hand in and then put the kli into that hand, or what I said before, dip, but it's the same idea.
And with the basket, would the basket have to be in the mikvah for like?
No, because the basket is going to float, right? So it's better than rafui, because the basket's not a bar dust that's going to say, ooh, I better hold this tight. It's going to float. Okay, so parenthetically, now not parenthetically, but on the record, we shift now to Reish Beis. A little bit Reish Beis, where the Mechaber writes that unlike in Taharis, where we're Machmir, that you could only be tovel a kli directly. You can't be tovel, by kochim. You can't be tovel kli betol kli. But for chulin, there is no such chumrah. And included in chulin is the laws of tefilas kelim haniknim in ha'akum. So you can be tovel a kli betol kli, provided that both of those kelim go into the mikvah, or provided, one second, yeah, okay, let's leave it at that. That you're putting both kelim in the mikvah. Yeah, actually, one second. Let's say you have a big pot and you're putting in some silverware. Or you have a big pot, you're putting in some glasses. Right? So the Ramah in Sivav quotes this, and he writes that the Kli HaPnimi should be loose in the Kli HaChitzon. So you shouldn't like stick a knife in a barrel. So, according to the analysis that we had in this simon over here in Kuf Chof, that's going to carry over to how we understand the Ramah over there, the Psak of the Ramah over there. Because the Ramah writes the following. Let's say you have a pot, and inside the first pot you want to put a smaller pot. And that small pot is heavy. And then you're going to dip both in the mikveh. So the Ramah says that's not going to be good, because the small pot is going to be resting on the floor of the big pot, and the mikvah water is not going to get in. So what do? So you got to make sure you put it on the side or something, make sure to roll it around, it should roll around. But what if you fill the big pot with water, and then you put the second pot in, and now you dip everything in the mikvah? So the heavy pot is, the inner heavy pot is weighing down inside the outer pot also. But it's all going in the mikveh. So that's going to depend on the same machlokas. If you go with the Rosh's approach, once everything's wet, then it all winds up in the mikveh, so everything's mechubet to the mikveh. If you go with the approach of Dibuk Beinoni, or certainly the third approach, then you have a problem. Right? So the Gra over here in Kuf Chof notes all that. That depending on which pshat you give over here, that's going to determine, again, in summary, if you have a heavy pot that you're putting inside another pot, and you're dipping everything in the mikveh, so if everything's all dry before you put in the mikveh, you have a problem. Because the inside pot is going to be weighing down the outer pot before you put it in, and the floor is not going to get wet. But if you put water in before you put in the heavy pot into the mikveh, and then you put in the second pot, so according to the Mekel approach here, that would be okay. According to the Mach approach, that would not be okay. But it's all going to mikveh. So then you have ashaka. Ah, but you don't have ashaka on the floor. So that's going to depend on how lenient you could be on the hashaka, whether you actually need some kind of looser area, a deeper bain in the area for the water to go in. Okay, I think we'll pause that over here. Just because it's go ahead.
Is that provided that the outer pot is also completely immersed in the mikveh?
Yeah. So
even though,
So I was a little bit hazy on this, because I'm still not 100% clear on this, but in Reish Beis Evov, so the language of the Ramah is Mutar Litbol Kli B'toch Kli Im Yesh B'fi HaChitzon K'Shfeferes Hanoid, that the mouth of the outer Kli has to be K'Shfeferes Hanoid, which I think is like two fingers. One second. Okay, I don't want to comment further on it. It touches upon inyonim and mikvos, which I'm... certainly, if you dip everything, it's good. If you don't dip everything, if you don't dip everything, in the standard case, it's going to be a problem, because there's no chibur to the mikveh, even to the inner pot, which you're trying to be tovel. Right? In other words, if you're not going to dip the outer one then the inner one's not going to get wet either. It's just going to be... here's the outer one.
You can handle the outside of the mikveh. Meanwhile, the pot's inside. The outer pot is inside, but you're holding the outside, the pot.
I see what you're saying.
And meanwhile, the water filled up inside that outer pot, you could
Right. There's a shach that distinguishes between a case where you're dipping where the outer pot needs to feel itself. I'm not familiar. I don't want to make a mistake. One thing I did want to mention, though, is that the standard mikveh baskets are not kelim, which is good for the Jews. They have holes in the bottom, so they're not halachically kalim. So therefore, even if you don't dip the whole basket in, it's fine, because since it's holes all everywhere, so the water is machaber to it. But in some mikvot, since Rabbi Willig noted that they went one better, or whatever, instead of having to splurge for that basket or getting a shopping basket, they used a laundry basket. So that he noted is already not so pashit. Because the laundry basket might have a halach of a kli, because it has a floor. And therefore, you would need the halach of shoferes hanod. And you'd have to make sure that the holes in the side, because you're not dipping the whole, if you're dipping the whole laundry basket in, fine. But usually you're not. It's a big laundry basket. So you're only going to dip it to the extent of your kalim. And then you're relying on the chibur. So those holes are going to have to be kishoferes hanod, which is going to depend on how you mishar kishoferes hanod. I think lachumra might even be as big as 2 inches. Don't remember, but those holes in the laundry basket might be 2 inches. So don't use the laundry basket. Use the old one, the one that have holes all over. Or poke holes in the bottom of the laundry basket. How many holes? How much do you need? So this is not a good eitzah. You should have one that's very, very holy. Holy baskets. So it's not a kli at all, because otherwise you're going to get involved in extra details in halacha as to when the tefillah be kosher or not. Okay, good. Spent a little extra time on that. But,
Rabbi, isn't general stuck in usually pasel tovli?
You mean that it shouldn't have a lock of a kli? Yeah, but only above the crack. No, and it was below the crack. If you machik revius, right? The laundry basket's holes usually start about an inch or two above the floor, so it could be machik revius mayim for sure. So still a lock of a kli. Okay, let's now get back to the more basic topics. But yeah, I started with that because that's the least covered. Just, actually, sorry about the choppiness. Once we've already discussed tefillah, so let's just finish up all the other halachas of the tefillah. In terms of the brachas, and mechaber paskes of gimel, the bracha is on one kli, it's al tefillas keli. I think that's the proper diktok based on parashas chukas. Al tefillas keli rather than al tefillas kli, which is smichas form, and if it's two kelim, al tefillas kelim. So here the post can point out as follows: the shachar already notes in sifkot and hay that any time you have a shaila, whether you tovel the kli or not, so of course we tovel it b'li bracha. But a better eitzah is to wait, if possible, till you have a kli that you are making a bracha on, and we tovel it together. What the shach does not spell out is what bracha do you say when you tovel it together. So obviously, if you're dipping two more kelim, so you say al tefillas kelim. What if you're only dipping one more? So here, the Sefer Tefillas Kelim points out from the later Achronim that, good enough, Tefillas Kelim. And it was even though one's Misafik, so then you can already say Tefillas Kelim. Certainly, since B'di'evet, any of this is good. Tefillas Kelim on one, Tefillas Kelim on two. Interesting, it's one of the very few brachas that modify, depending on how you're doing it. So the Shach and the Taz quote an opinion from the Yisra V'Heter and the Mordechai that you say, Al Tefillas Kli Matchis. And the Shach says, the Shach sounds like, right, that's what we should do. That's what it sounds like. And the Taz says, no, we don't, we're not some afarit. Al tfilas kli matchis hanikchim min ha'akum. You don't have to have a whole sentence. So whole shayla, why we don't just say al tfila? Why do we say al tfilas kli b'chlal? So al tfilas kli we say. But we don't say al tfilas kli matchis. The meaning is like the Taz, not like the Shach. What about al tfilas keli versus al tfilas kelim? So the Aruch HaShulchan testifies that in his day, in the Vardik, I guess, everyone said al tfilas kelim. And all the Sfarim say the minig is to follow the Shulchan Aruch. So here, I quote one of the Talmidim of the Yeshiva. Unfortunately, passed away at a young age, but he used to joke around after learning Hilchos Melicha. So I said, no, how do you do Melicha? Bottom line. With all of the Shilas and the Lums, how do you do Melicha? So I said, you read the box. You get kosher salt. It says on the box, soak the meat for... So, the simple way is, what bracha do you make? Whatever it says in the sign, right? La halacha, whatever it says in the sign is what people are going to say. But if you're not, just, you don't want to rely on the sign, so the psak of the Shulchan Aruch is al tefillas keli for one, al tefillas kelim for two, and or more, and the Aruch HaShulchan says you always say al tefillas kelim. Again, I don't think there's a clear-cut minig one way or the other. Notwithstanding the Aruch HaShulchan's edus. Okay, now a little more about the tefillah. Yeah. And even al tefillah is also good. Certainly al tefillah's keli works for many. I don't think it's pointed necessarily on the page, but the later Achronim say that. The Shulchan Aruch in Sif Yud Beis points out you got to dip the handles. Once again, we saw that Lagabi Hagola based on a different dynamic, but here too, you got to dip the handles because that's Mechubet to the Kli, so everything has to go in the mikveh all at the same time. Yud Gimli writes, you got to remove any chatzitza, including rust. So here we have another important chiluk between Hagola versus Tvila. Let to collect them. Lagabi Tvila, it follows the rules of chatzitza. By Hilchas Nida, Hilchas Tum V'Tara, and we know the basic rules. Rubo hamakbid is chaytz min ha-Torah. Rubo sheino makbid or miuto hamakbid is chaytz min ha-Rabbanan. And if it's a mira, sheino makbid, it's not chaytz at all. It doesn't really say in Shulchan Aruch whether it's a lechachila to take off even the miut sheino makbid. We know that lagabe hilchas nida, there's a lechachila, a minig at least, to take off even the miut sheino makbid, wherever possible. That lechachila is not mentioned lagabe tvilas kalim. I just note, not having researched it fully, because I would imagine there are other shittas, but the Chelkas Binyamin, one of the Likutim nowadays I quoted before, quotes from other Achrayim that lecharchila also applies to Tvilas Kelim. That lecharchila you should remove every chatzitza, if possible. Not possible, so just like by Nida, we're not machmir, for sure we're not going to be machmir here. So, here, if it's a mi or chain or makbid, it's not a problem. Legabi Hagala, if it's a mi or chain or makbid of rust or some other divider, it is a problem. And you can't do Hagala, so you got to do Libun Kal on that area. Right, so just in sum, I say l'chasimonim, three nafkaminis between Hagala and Tvila. One is Lagabe mi or chain or makbid of chatzitza. It's not a problem for Tvila, it is a problem for Hagala. One is Lagabe whether they could touch. It's not a problem for Tvila, it is a problem for Hagala. And what's the third? I forgot. I think we mentioned in this chavur. I forgot her. What's the third? Patch. Okay. I forgot. They're the third. Different bechinas. I collected the three. Yeah.
If you would just be make on take bolakach polto. So if there was a bliya with like a sticker on it, would you be able to be magal it also? It's not gonna.
Maybe. Like tlai, like the Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch Mishpura says by tlai, that if you already cleaned it out in advance, and then you'll say Kabbalah Kach Polto, and you'll bleed it, maybe.
Or you use the cook with that.
Ah, so that might be another nafkamina. Well, depending on whether you makbid or not, so that would be the other way. Okay, let's leave it at two. There's definitely a third, but I have to look. Okay.
What would you suggest in the case that Mute makbid, so he found a little label on the pot, so he realized it.
After tefillah.
So he should tefillah again with
the bracha. Yeah. Yeah. Well, if he's mamish makbid.
So
if it's a suffik makbid, yeah. If it's again here, Hilchas Peid, just like by Nida, goes by the greatest of chumrah by yourself in the world. If you're makbid, the world's not makbid, it's a problem. If the world's makbid, you're not, it's a problem. The only time it's not a problem if you're both not makbid. I think it's with a bracha, because it's not a good tefillah. Like, most of the time, a lot of times, it's not so clear whether you're makbid. So then, lechera will be without a bracha. Okay, so Rabbi Tendler, Rabbi Neuberg always used to like to point out the following joke, which is really not a joke, that if you get fancy china, or not fancy china, but fancy crystal, so there's a chiyuv to keep the label on. Because what good is it to have fancy crystal when they'll think you bought it from a mom and pop shop? So you have to have the label on that says Waltham crystal, whatever it is. So obviously that's not makbid. that's makbid that it should be there. Okay, most of the time labels you are makbid on.
Well, that shayla would be made by, right, there's a shayla by Nida, the same thing. She's makbid as a doctor, have it on.
Yeah. Good point, especially here, since it's more kal than Nida. Now, in terms of the Maaseh Tevilah itself, most labels I thought, it depends on the society. There's no fixed rule, but I would assume that most people, when they get their pots, they don't want the labels on. And even if a yeshiva shigai doesn't care, but if Rov HaOlam does care, then it's a problem. Certainly if it's on the inside side, and if it's on the outside side. Most people don't necessarily want to advertise the fact that it's a weird pot or whatever. If for no other reason other than the fact they don't want it to get all, you know, slimy and greasy during the first dishwashing cycle. So most if my data is incorrect, then the psak is incorrect.
So just without listening to a normal plate or a cup to the sticker on the bottom.
It all depends. It depends on society. I'm hesitant to answer that. I can't speak for society. I think Rabbi Neuberger pointed out you got to make in a similar issue. You got to make an assessment. You don't necessarily have to take a scientific survey. But I would assume that Al Pi Rov people are makbid on stickers. Maybe a cup with a bottom sticker, maybe not. I just don't know. The Shach and the Taz point out in Sifkatan Tezayin and Sifkatan Chavches, in explaining the Psakim of the Shulchan Aruch in Sif Yudalid and Sif Tezvav, that although there is a machlokis gabi nida, whether it needs kavan or not, the Maisa Tvila, we paskin lakula mikra din with a chumra that you should be tovel again, the Ramah says, if it didn't have kavanah, but mikra din we paskin lakula. But here the Mechaber nor the Ramah, neither Mechaber nor the Ramah quote the chumra, and they just say tefillah doesn't need kavanah. So based on that, the ramification is that there are three types of tefillah that would be good as a result of that, even though there might have been a problem with kavanah. Now, the first one, of course, is felon by itself, the most basic one, which is pointed out by one of the Noisa Kalim here. I don't remember either the Taz or the Shach. I don't think it's mentioned directly by the Ramah or the Mechaber, but presumably they would agree. A goy and a katan. Of course, if it fell in by itself, obviously you have to see it, because otherwise you don't know it went in. If a katan does it, or a goy does it, you have to see it too, because you can't believe them. Which is a common mistake people make. They send their kid to the mikveh, and then they come back and say, "Sisi kachol asher tzivisani." So if the kid is under bar bat mitzvah, they have no nemonis. Certainly a goy is not nemon, but so you have to be there, Oymin al Gabov. Not only, and there's another reason you have to be Oymin al Gabov, because we just spent 45 minutes to 50 minutes describing how to be Tovalit. So you got to make sure you did a good job. They used the basket, or they just dipped it with their hands and didn't know this whole thing about wetting it, etc. There's another reason you have to be there. So here, just a few haris on the tvila of a felin, or a katan, or a goy. Obviously, lechachili, you're not going to want it to fall in by itself, even though it's good for the eved, but you're going to lose the bracha. But if it did, it did. Okay, so too late. You're in the mikvah, and you know your first spoon fell in before you got a chance to do anything. Okay, so for falling, you can't make a bracha on that. With a goy, so the taz is mefakbeik, very nice, it's a kosher tefillah, but what about the bracha? So no problem, you make the bracha, and he'll be tovel it. So we're used to hearing in the yeshiva from our Rebbeim that it's no good because a bracha has to be made on a maisa mitzvah, not just on a kiyum mitzvah. So I can't make the bracha if the guy is doing the maisa. So the Taz says you're going to lose the bracha, so don't do that. So that's why the Mechaber used the language of B'di'evid, that if it dipped al yidei guy, it's good, but not the lechachila can lose the bracha. So the Taz is a chiddush, but what if you're dipping too? So you'll make the bracha, and that'll count for what the guy is doing too. So other achrayim, I'm a fact bake on that too. As quoted by the Sefer Tevilos Kalim, the Chalakas Binyamin, your bracha is going to go on the Maisa Anochri, who's not Mitzuv and Mitzvus. There's no Tziruf. But Lamaisa, it is the Psak of the Taz. And although I didn't research it, but I assume that maybe some rely on it in catering halls. We'll get to that later. Those catering halls that are Machmed to be told to Kalim, which is a big Machloik, is Saposkim. So how are you going to be told with 2,000 dishes? So you could pay top dollar for the Jews to do it, or you could pay minimum wage for the non-Jews to do it, right? So maybe they rely on the Taz. I mean, they get a mashgiach to do it, and then with supervision, they have the goyim. I don't know. I have to call up the OU to see what the policy is. Concerning ketanim, so here, as he pointed out, the maisa tefillah is good, but they have no nemonis. So the Ramah points out if the gadol is there, it's good. But if the gadol is not there, it's no good. It's pointed out by the Mechaber, you can't believe him. And the Pesachei Tshuva starts being mafalpul about when maybe you could believe him on glass, because only the Rabbanan. Maybe you could believe him if he's 13, even though you don't know for sure that he was maybe Shtei Saris. That's a discussion. The Stadim Lakan Lakan. It's not 100% clear that you could believe a katan even on a glass, because even though it's Derabanan, but it's a Cheskes Isser, it's an Isser Shtamshus, so maybe you can't believe a katan that. So that's a pilpul. It's the Derech HaMelech is only to let a katan do it, you know, with parental supervision. There, of course, you don't have a bracha problem. He's a Yehudi, so he's at least he's a Vigil Chinuch, so he'll listen to your bracha say amen. So there is a chalois bracha there. Yeah.
That'd be far reaching. Sorry for you.
Yeah, it's fine. If not, we'll have to push it off. Yeah.
With the discussion by Kedushin, the bracha of Shekhar Shevach al Raya, how does the bracha fit? The Taz says with Shevach
al
Raya. So can we possibly say here
it's also Shevach?
It's not on, because it's also a bracha on taking from the Israel making Hector.
It's interesting. I don't know. I throw out the further complicated topic that the Taz quotes that the makor for tvilas akum, meaning a goy being tovel the kli, it's from a tshuvas Ramban. Maybe tshuvas amichosos, Ramban, Rashbo, I'm not sure exactly who the author is. I'm not so convinced the Ramban said you make a bracha on tvilas kelim. The Ritva in Masechta Avodah Zarah says beferish that you do not make a bracha on tvilas kelim because it's a matir. So the Shulchan Aruch totally ignores that whole approach. Paskins like Tosfos, because Tosfos already speaks about the bracha. And we are apparently paskining that it's either a mitzvah or it's a mati with a bracha, however you understand shechita, etc. So that's just going to further complicate your topic. Because even if there is a bracha, maybe it's a different kind of bracha, which might have been to some extent where the tatz is coming from, shechita. But
kind of
I'm sorry?
Maybe it's like matke. The mitzvah is not the maisa tefila, but rather that the
state
should be mitzvah.
Okay. Right. But I'm just noting that some rishonim even go, you know, straight, no bracha. They have a pilpalak and you don't say a bracha on hagala, but you do say a bracha on tefillah. So some rishonim say, right, you don't say neither. We're passing a split, which obviously means there's some kind of difference between the two. Okay, good. That's just collecting some of the miscellaneous halachas of tefillah, and most of it we covered from Reish Beis too. There's a Reish Beis just spells it a little more about the laws of chatzitza, but the rules are basically the same. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
The katan the same category as the boy because it's not yet mitzvah.
Yeah, but at least he's a gil chinuch, so you're not losing the bracha totally. It's not going into thin air. So when the Taz says you'll make the bracha on some kalim, and the goy will, I just had some achrayim have a problem with that because I was there at Sirif, and the goy's meising your bracha with the katan. At least he's a gil chinuch. So there's some kind of it's here, at least on a rabbanon level. Okay, let's get back to the more basics in terms of materials, as is spelled out by Rabbi Neuberger. Based on the psukim, the only thing that's chayiv min haTorah, again, we're assuming that it's min haTorah, even though there's a big discussion whether it's some holds the Rabbanim, we pass it's min haTorah, is metal. So, Rabbi Neuberger discussed about the new metals, ayin shom. Not really going to elaborate now, basically three shittas. The Raisa, the Rabbanim, maybe not at all. Halacha, the chayiv. Rabbi Neuberger, I think, left a pick book that maybe should make a bracha, right? I think it's very paskin. Aluminum, it shouldn't make a bracha, because there's room to say it's not chayiv at all. But Roy Vapoiskim hold that you toivel aluminum with a bracha. This is the psak of Rav Moshe Feinstein Tzatzal, because he holds it's chayiv the Rabbanan. This is the psak of the Sefer Tevilas Kalim. I think from Shlomo Zalman and Yaakov Kamenetsky. So most say do make a bracha, but some Rabbanim hold not to. So to be Yaitim Dei Safik, preferable to get a stainless steel kli, which is also new, by the way. But at least it's an alloy. Most of it is iron, right? So they're already probably you could be safe making a bracha. So I want to discuss a little bit about covered kelim. This is
the
I'm sorry? Yeah, I didn't get the glass. I'm talking about metal. Avadi make a bracha on glass. That's a common mistake people make, that you don't make a bracha on glass. But I didn't get the glass. I'm discussing metal. First, discussing metal. Everything about metal. Don't get the glass. Everything about glass. So, I was talking about new metals, yeah.
Don't people use this mafokus by aluminum as a sniff directly disposable?
Yeah. Yeah, but you can only use it as a sniff if you're not if your hole's not chayiv at all. Ramayish didn't go that route. He thought it was a pashit that it's chayiv the rabbanon, so it won't be. Well, it still will be a sniff because we're dealing with the rabbanon. So either way, it's a sniff. It would only not be a sniff if you hold lumen as deraisa. But whether you hold lumen as derabbanon, you hold lumen as pater at all. Obviously, it's the greatest sniff if you hold this, it might be pater totally, but it's still a sniff as derabbanon. Because then, if you on a derabbanon, you could come up with a weaker svara to be able to be makel. Okay. But what about covered kalim? So the Gemara discusses covered kalim. It's called clay kunya. It actually discusses it in two contexts. It discusses it in terms of hilchas agolah, and it discusses it in terms of hilchas tevilas kalim. That might be another nafkamina, but that's I don't think what I had in mind. Clay kunya is bipshuto, although there is a machlokis or shiny about what it is cheres that is covered by a layer of metal. Okay, so it's metal on the inside side that touches the food, and cheres in the gufa kli. Meaning the core of the kli is cheres. So the Gemara says it's chayiv in tevila. Parenthetically, it's not kasherable. That's a sif in Toftan Aleph. That if you have cheres on the inside side and metal, even though metal is kasherable, one might have thought it is because that's what's touching the food, that's what's beleya. No, so we say, no, it's beleya through and through, and therefore you can't kasher, you can't kasher cheres. So you're chayiv in tevila, but it's not kasherable. What about other nuances of that? So, first of all, the poskim assume, it's not really clear in the Gemara, poskim assume that's a chi of the Rabbana. That min haTorah goes by the Ikra Kli. As we'll see later, it might even need ikarakli plus the parts such as food. You might need two tzadim lechumra to be chayiv in a Torah. But midrabbanan, it's chayiv. Since the inside layer, I should say, that's touching the food is chayiv. How far do you take it? So the pashta reading of the Gemara would be whether it's covered on both sides, meaning the outside side and the inside side touching the food, or just the inside side, because bottom line, the part that's touching the food is metal, so it should be chayiv. That's the kli sudi shebo. So the Ramah quotes from the smak and the isva heter that who's choshesh that maybe if it's covered only on the inside side, it's not really functional. It's just for beauty, for noi. And if that's the case, that's not really a part of the kli, and therefore wouldn't be chayiv. So in that case, he says to be tovel without a bracha. Again, wherever we know that it's functional, so you tovel with a bracha, that's a gemara. Even if it's only derabanan, you still make a bracha on a derabanan. But where there's a chashash, then it might only be for beauty, so then you only tovel without a bracha. So this is the psak of the Ramah. I never understood the svara. If you want beauty, so you put it on the outside, not on the inside. But I don't know, those are the words. Do you have to be choshesh to be tolo without a bracha, even if it's covered on the outside side alone? So that's a machlokis. The simple reading of the Ramah is that if it's only the outside side, it's totally putter. Because it might be for beauty, good, so it's putter, and there's no functionality to it. But the Shach quotes from the Yisuf Heter, to be machmir, the Mordechai, to be machmir even then to be tolo without a bracha. And different reasons are given. Some say because of low plug. Okay, either way, the only time you make a bracha if it's covered on both sides, if it's covered on the inside side, no bracha, and if it's covered on the outside side, so some say not at all to be tovel, and some say you tovel without a bracha. Now, let's discuss the flip side. Baby spoons, or Teflon pans. So we'll start with a baby spoon. A baby spoon is metal, sometimes. So it's all plastic. It's metal. And then you have this rubber covering, so it shouldn't hurt the baby's gums. So that's not discussed in the Gemara, because this is the flip. The gufa kli is metal, and the outside, so you could have said that since the part of touching the food is plastic, rubber, whatever, is totally potter. You could have said midr kisa, since the ikar kli is metal, it's chayiv. Poskim have stopping about this. It's clear they're not equating it with kli kunya, because if they would, then you would be tovel it. Let it be derabanan, but you're still tovel. They have a suffix about this. So Allah Almighty, the Svarim say, in such a case, Beli Bracha. Should you apply the same to Teflon pots? Because after all, isn't that what a Teflon pot is? It's metal in the core, and then it has a coating of plastic, and plastic, we'll assume for now, is not Chayiv and Tefillah. So maybe it's the same Shaila, and you should do a Beli Bracha. So Rav Shlomo Zalman said, right, Beli Bracha. It's a big Kiddush. The Tevel frying pans many times without a Bracha. And Ramosha is quoted in the Ali Yeshurun, and I mentioned already he has many oral psukim from Ramosha that are not quoted anywhere else. He says, no, that's just such a thin layer. That's not significant, even though it's significant in terms of, you know, they shouldn't stick. But the Gufa Kli is metal, that's the Ikara Kli, and you could see the metal. So I don't know if he quite says that, but you know, it's such a thin layer that it's not significant for purposes of Tefillas Kelim, and therefore you make a bracha. Okay, this is a Shaila. I don't know, unless you received the psak from Moshe, so maybe do it without a bracha or do it without a kalim. Okay. Now let's get the glass. So the Shulchan Aruch writes in the same sif that the glass is chayiv and tefillah. That's based on a Gemara. That in the simple reading of the Gemara, although there is a minority opinion otherwise, that it's a derabanan. The chachamim or geyser on glass, because it has similar properties to metal in that they are both, when broken, could be melted down and be matich mechadash and make the kli over again. So that's chayiv derabbanan. So the without even noting this on the page of the Shulchan Aruch, but the latest forum point out, of course you make a bracha. It's a chayiv derabbanan, but you make a bracha. So there was one achron, I don't know, remember his name, who held you don't make a bracha on glass, and somehow that achron seemed to have taken the day because many have this messiah from Europe that didn't make a bracha on glass. Maybe it had a suffix whether it is glass or not, I don't know. But Lemaisa, the later post can say, as long as your glass is glass, so you make a bracha on glass. How far do you take glass? So just like there are new metals, there's new glasses. How new is new? So newish, but not quite so new, is Pyrex and Duralex. Because that's basically glass, which they add in another element to it. I think it's boron, or maybe another element that makes it very hard, that it shouldn't smash, and it should be able to withstand heat. So Rov HaPoskim hold that that's chayiv with a bracha because it's not sufficiently different from ancient glass that they had in antiquity to consider it anything different. It's not even a suffix, so you should make a bracha. They want those who are mafakpik, so that's why in this packet here, on the back page, this is a leftover for when Rabbi Tendler was giving the shiurim. So he quotes from the Detroit newsletter on Tfilas Kalim, because it was one of the few summaries that he found, but most of it he argues on. So here they have in Tfilas without a bracha, Duralex, Pyrex. So here you have Rabbi Neuberger, Rabbi Tendler's Horace. No, Duralex is glass, Pyrex is glass, Tfilas with a bracha. And indeed, that is the psak of Rav HaPoskim as well. That's what Oli Shurin writes, that's what the Sefer Tfilas Kalim writes, and Rabbi Neuberger, when he spoke about it, I'm not sure if he'll address it or not, I don't know if he did already, that's the standard psak. What's more exciting is, of course, Pyrex and Duralex with respect to Agola, but that we discussed already, is glass, but not glass. And that's Corningware and Karel. That's a very lively topic. Because it's actually a machloek, it's a post, can bottom line what to do. So it's easy to say, be told without a bracha, right? But what's the halacha l'maisa? So the problem is that it's white, and this is what you get for either engagement presents or wedding presents, whatever. It's your weekday china. It looks like a ceramic, but not quite. It doesn't really have that china look, and it's less breakable than china. So, without getting involved in my whole Mada Pilpul over here, because I did some research on this, and following the footsteps of Rabbi Tendler, Rabbi Neuberger, and visiting the Corning factory, not Bedavka for this, and not so L'Shem Shemayim. And the bottom line is that it's made, Corel is made from the same elements as glass, but it's made in a special way with different layers that is such that if it ever breaks, it's very hard to break it, but if it ever breaks, you could not melt it down and remake it. So the glass was not glass. It has some properties of glass, namely the underlying elements, but it has other properties that it does not share in common, namely its remakeability once it breaks. So the bottom line is, Rav Moshe was makel on this, and he held it's no better than Suffolk glass, and therefore it's putter totally, because glass is the Rabbanan, so Suffolk the Rabbanan Lakula. It might even be Vaday not glass, but even if it's Suffolk glass, it's putter. That's Rabbi Felder quotes, if you string together the footnotes. And Rabbi Tendler and Rabbi Neuberger were both thoroughly convinced that it's total glass, and therefore, theoretically, you should make a bracha. But in deference to Rav Moshe, they caved in and said, don't make a bracha, but be tovel it. And as Rabbi Willig pointed out to me, Rabbi Felder caved in to pressure, and in the second edition, he put in parentheses that it is preferable to be tovel without a bracha. Because apparently, when the first edition came out, they said, what? Karel doesn't need a tefillah? I said, yeah, that's what Rav Moshe told me. So I think he went back to Rav Moshe, and Rav Moshe said, okay, you want to be Tayvel? Tayvel, but without a bracha. So that made it into the second edition. But Rabbi Willig still stands strong in the first psak. I got to check again. I don't know if it changed, but I asked him relatively recently. He held Karel is no better than Suffolk glass, and therefore it's Potter. Rabbi Neuberger and Rabbi Tendler both held it's Chayiv, Betvila, even with a bracha, but Lamai said they hesitated, so they would paskin without a bracha, or to be told with other things. And As I mentioned before, that depends, l'chayra, on exactly how you define glass. Corningware is more complicated, because Corningware, in its materials, I believe, it has an earthenware component, what they call a crystalline component. So it's kind of a mixture between glass and cheres. So you can see why that's more in the Suffolk zone. It's more of a tzad to say you don't have to be told at all. But in many lists of compilations on what to be tovel, including this Detroit kosher gram, so they say, liyesses at least, to be tovel without a bracha. Here, Rabbi Felder has the same sock, that Corningware and Karel don't need tevil at all, and it's preferable to be tovel without a bracha. So again, Corningware is more of a tzad lakula, because it's less glass than its sister kli of Karel. Just to give you, Karel is normally what they make plates out of. Corningware is usually what they make, like these white trays that are pretty, but you can put on the fire. That's usually Corningware. So that's kind of a mixture. I'm sorry? You put in the fire, the oven, etc. So that's mamish asafik. I think if you look in the mad of it, it's mamish in the middle. And that gets involved in whether you have a cleat, it's a majority one, the other, etc. Okay, adkan. To further complicate matters, the cups of a Corningware set, excuse me, the cups of a Karel set are not Karel. How do you like that? That's what I found on the internet. The cups of a Karel set is not really Karel, it's Corningware. So if you want to be really fancy, you could say that maybe the plates you got to put in the mikveh, maybe with a bracha, and the cups maybe are totally potter. You can drive Baal Batim crazy. So whatever, if you're paskening, with the easiest thing is the whole set without a bracha. That's a preferably to be told or something else with
most,
it.
Most China are in both these categories?
No, I didn't know. This is not China. This is a totally different kind of kli. Okay. It's more durable than China, but it's less elegant. Precisely because it's more durable. There's certain elegance to the breakability of it. Anyway, good. Porcelain, we already discussed. We didn't discuss, but the Pesachei Tshuva quotes from the Yavetz that porcelain, which, by the way, is China. It took me, I think, 5 years to realize that. But it's the same thing. China is just the funny way of saying porcelain because it used to come from China. And so we already discussed in terms of Hagola that it's not kasherable, even though that itself was debated, because it's not quite cheres, but the poskim assumed that both legabe Hagola, that you cannot kasher it, and legabe tvila, that it doesn't need tvila, that's the Raifa poskim hold that way. The Aruch HaShulchan quotes a minik to be tovel, porcelain, even so, but he says, certainly don't make a bracha. He makes a big deal about that, because apparently in his day there were people who were being tovel, porcelain / china dishes with a bracha, and he's marish against that. Make sure not to make a bracha. But make a redin, he holds totally potter. The problem is that just like we discussed before, earthenware that's coated with metal, what about earthenware that's coated with glass? So this is discussed by the Chedusha B'Kiv Eger in the name of the Prima Godin. It speaks about gluzirt. Little unclear what the Prima Godin meant by gluzirt, because it could mean he meant a thin layer of metal. Let's say, look, in the early Achroinim, the quote by the Sefer Tzvi Kalim, Gluzirt means different things in different contexts. But the bottom line is, if you have a significant layer of a glass coating, then even though you could have made a case that it's putter totally, because the Gemara maybe was only Mechayev, a metal lining, because metal at its core is Chayev Min HaTorah. So along came the Chachamim and said that even if it's a coating of metal, it's Chayev Derabanan. But glass, which is only chayav derabanan, so maybe if it's only a coating, you should be totally potter. But the bottom line is, we're tovel it. But the poskim say, because of that suffix, if you should not be tovel the cheres that's coated with glass with a bruch, only without a bruch. So what if it's a very, very thin coating? So that's a machloikis of poskim. Rabbi Forst is very stark on this in his kitzer, Hilchos Tevilos Kelim, that absolutely you have to be tovel coated glazed china, even if however thin the layer of glass is. And they have a Messiah from Ramosha, an oral psak from Ramosha, first quoted by the Arla Yeshurin and verified by other Talmidim, that such a thin layer is not included in their coating, even if you should assume that a coating of glass is chayiv. And therefore Ramosha paskin that our china does not need tefillah. So I felt very bad. I had a frumer relative over for Yom Tov, so I told him, the Kalim and the China's not tivled, so whatever, make up your own mind. So I realized that even if you're going to make it like Ramosha, which is the way Rabbi Schechter paskins and the way Rabbi Neuberger paskins and the way Rabbi Tendler paskins, but maybe it's a good idea to put in the mikveh anyway, you know, if you're going to have mixed company, you know, you want to make everybody happy. I don't know, either way, but the bottom line is, in your own house, so this is a machlokis. I think Rav Olam is machmir. Rav Olam outside of YU, interestingly, even though it was Ramosha, but Rav Olam is machmir, but tivled without a bracha. Rabbi Tendler said, "You're nothing better to do with your time during Sheva Brachis, so you could be whatever. So it's a waste of time to be tayvel Yishayna." But many in YU, in the orbit of the Arabeim, so they're not tayvel China based on that psak that it's so thin that it doesn't really require.
Isn't it not real glass?
He doesn't own the plate.
Ooh, stay tuned. That'll be the next year. Neuberg will discuss that at length. That's not pashut at all. Many poskim held that yes, he has an achrayis, that he's not allowed to eat on my kalim if I wasn't told with him. But that's one of the big svaras, lakula. But Ramosha didn't go that way in terms of that particular aspect.
Isn't it not real glass
and spray? Oh, so I should have mentioned that. Thank you. Rabbi Tendler further pointed out that a lot of it is not even glass at all. To just say spray on. That in and of itself is not necessarily good enough, because the spray on could be liquid glass that they're spraying on. unless you're going to say it's too thin to be significant. So it's just noi ba'alma, like we saw before. But some of it is not even glass. Apparently, in industry, some of it is just more of a plastic-like material. So that's for sure. Except you're not going to know, you know, unless you really research it. Okay. At length, Rav Neuberger went into detail. I'm just going to mention very, very briefly about the two main kulis concerning what's called the kli suda, or the definitions. The first is it has to touch the food, which is sivdal and shulchan aruch, which is why an oven grate is putter, because it doesn't touch the food. And the same thing for an oven rack, provided that you always use it with a pat, or kli hamafsik. And parenthetically, I tumbled a little bit in the shir, but there is a machlokis about aluminum foil, whether that could serve as a sufficient hefsik to patter, let's say, your toaster oven rack from tefila, if you always use it with aluminum foil. Rabbi Schechter, I believe, is machmer in that. Rabbi Willig is makel in that. In previous years, I think Rabbi Neuberger felt that as long as it's normal to use aluminum foil all the time, if it's just you, to get out of Tvil's Kalim, or just your quirk, so then it would be Chayiv. But if it's normal, so then it would be Potter. Okay, there's a big discussion about this in the Beurim and the Chalkas Binyamin. What are the pros and cons of that Svar of aluminum foil? But Lamaitz is Machlokas. The second Kula is that it's not used for the final stages of the food. Meaning, it's not a pot that's bringing the food to completion, or it's not the silverware plates that's actually being used to serve or eat the food. This is Sifhei, about the Sakin Shal Shechita. So leaving aside all the details, the bottom line is that the Taz and the Shach have a machlokis halach lemais on this. The Mechaber writes, if it's not being used for the final stages of the food, like a sak and shashchit, is totally putter. That's it. Case closed. The Ramah is machmir to be tovah bli bracha. So the Shach and the Taz want to know, how far do you take that? So the Taz says, always. Anytime it's an intermediate stage of the food, you have to be tovah it without a bracha. Which is why, Bipshuto, according to that approach, you should be tovel a meat grinder, even though it's in the intermediate stages, or a blender, even if you use it exclusively for things that are in the intermediate stages. Rabbi Neuberg discussed that, or an egg beater, etc., even if it's only in the intermediate stages, a cookie cutter, a rolling pin. Most of the time, rolling pin is wood, so it's not chayiv anyway, but if it's metal. So then, bli bracha. The Shach, based on a certain diak in the Ramah, which I'm not going to go into, but the bottom line is, the Shach Paskins, Rabbi Neuberger did, that the only time you tovel, even without a bracha, is where that kli theoretically could be used for something in its final stages. Like a shechita knife could be used for steak, theoretically. Cookie cutter, so what are you going to use it for in the final stages? Assuming it's metal. If it's plastic, then talk about it. Again, Rova Poskim hold plastic is potter. Even though some put it in the realm of glass, because it's also meltable and remakeable. But most say, Chazal Menev Geyser in plastic, so it's totally
putter.
According
to Taz, then a big meat grinder would have to?
Yeah, a big meat grinder, according to Taz, would be chayiv without a bracha. And according to the Shach, what are you going to use the meat grinder for? It's designed to cut meat, it's not really designed to cut other things. Not designed to cut vegetables or whatever. Parenthetically, the Taz and the Shachs quote a Prisha, who they both agree with, that it's seemingly based on this discussion, but it doesn't seem to follow that it should be based on this discussion. It speaks about scissors that you are gozes yurakos with. I hope some of you are started going to the Shulchan Aruch, so you'll remember that Prisha. So the Prisha says, putter. So the Shach and Taz say, right, putter. So they, what do you mean? According to the Taz, so let it be an intermediate stage. You're snipping off the onion, okay, and then you're cutting the onion weiter, but it's touching the food, and according to the Shach, so you can't use the same knife or the same scissors to cut finished food. So it's not fresh, but I believe the Sefer Tevilas Kalim gives a very beautiful answer to this. That, and this is not like other Achronim who didn't understand it this way. We're not talking about cutters, we're talking about Geziza. Geziza is talking about either while the vegetable is still attached to the ground or maybe right after it, they're taking off the gunk of the vegetable. They're cutting it off. It's a funny word to use for a vegetable. Geziza sayerek. So it could be what the preacher is driving at. It's talking about cutting it from the ground. But if it's already detached, so then it would be. At least b'li bracha. If you have a vegetable cutter that's being used to cut the vegetable before the final stages. So here I wanted to mention that the Sefer Chalkas Binyamin points out Yora or Ari, that there's a machlekes, even Rishonim maybe, or Rishonim versus Achronim, on how far do you take this intermediate stage? What if you have something that theory could be the final stages, but the way you're using it is not the final stages? So Ari mentioned measuring cups, right? Measuring cups, at least sometimes always. You might put water in it, right? But you're putting it into the cake batter. So you're not using the water, you're not drinking it. So is that called final stage, so with a bracha, or is that called intermediate stage, so maximum without a bracha? So the Chalukas Miyom writes that it's a machlokas. You have a diuk from the the Shev Yaakov in Pitzchei Tshuva Sivkot Vav, where he speaks about the fact that you had a certain kli that was attached to the tanur that he says does not need tzvilas kalim because it's used to put into dough. What? Because water. They use water that's going to put into dough. But you could also drink the water. And as a matter of fact, he notes that sometimes they would. But he writes, that was only mi otashmish. Don't have to worry about it. What do you mean? But even though it's mi otashmish, but the water is totally drinkable. So the Shev Yaakov was assuming this svara of the Taz and the Shach, based on the Ramah, that goes by what you're using it for. So according to that, there would have been a svara to say the measuring cups maybe are takapater. Because, are only b'li bracha. Right? But the Chalukas Binyamin quotes in one of the Rishonim, the Yusuf Heter, that no, it goes by tachlis. What could it be used for? So if you have water, even though you intend to use that kli for water for Lisha, so that's called final stage. So Lamaisa, I think lo yitzonu midei safik, and I think Rabbi Neuberger went that way too. He says no, since theoretically you could use it for final stage, so that l'chayra would be with a bracha.
Wait, he says
why?
Water.
Measuring cups.
Measuring cups.
I think Rabbi Neuberger said that measuring cups would be chayav with a bracha if they're metal, because you could put water in it, but you're not using the water in the final stages. So Rabbi Neuberger said, yeah, but you could drink from it, but you're not using it. So that's subjective, not final stages. So according to the Shev Yaakov, it sounds like Taka would be putter, meaning you wouldn't make a bracha. But the Chalukas Miyam quotes from the Yisuf Heter, and that seems to be where Rabbi Neuberger was going according to. That no, it goes by, if it's a totally edible food, just because you're not using it in the final stages, so that is chayiv.
And the Chalukas Binyamin also says with a bracha.
He doesn't give a final psak on this, but he discusses it. So, again, one second. Yeah. Right. Right. The Eitz of Heter says with a bracha. Right. But halacha l'maisa, maybe it will at least be a suffix. Rabbi Neuberger seemed to imply with a bracha. Okay, a few other halachas, and let's conclude. Time's already late. In terms of ownership, so as Rabbi Neuberger already discussed, you have to have a transference of ownership from the guy to the Jew, and it has to be fully owned by a guy. And then, in order to be chayiv, it has to at some point be somewhat owned by a Jew. Now, what do I mean by somewhat? So the clear-cut case where the Jew buys it or gets it as a gift. The not clear-cut case is where the goy acquires a partial ownership via the halach of mashkom, which was discussed briefly, Rabbi Neuberger, that's siftes in the Shulchan Aruch. Again, the situation being that the Jew lent money to a non-Jew, the Jew gave him a mashkin. So the halach is as follows. If the guy intends, or it looks like he intends, to keep the mashkon in the hands of the Jew, so that is considered sufficient ownership with respect to the laws of Tevilas Kalim for the Jew to be tovel it with a bracha. And that could be for one of two reasons. Either adin, bal choyv kain mashkin, or a lamdus that's local to Tevilas Kalim, that kvar nikra shem yisrael alav. If I'm not mistaken, I think the Gro goes that route. That you don't necessarily have to tie this in to whether Baal Chav Kain Mashkin or not, but Lagabi Tvilas Kalim, it's enough to have Shem Yisrael alav. That is even with a bracha. The Gemara has a suffix, and what if it doesn't look like the guy doesn't intend to leave it with you? It looks like he's going to pay back the debt and he's going to get the Mashkin back. So that is a suffix in the Gemara, and therefore such a thing is only Nitpal B'li Bracha. In the other direction, though, it doesn't pose a problem. If a Jew gives a mashkin to a guy, and then he gets it back, so then the fact that the guy had it does not make it to be in the ownership of a goy such that when he gets it back, he should have to be tovel it. That is the Shulchan Aruch in later in Se'if Yud Aleph.
That seems to be much, but it's not possible.
Yeah, so, well, if you look in the Gra there and the other Noisei Kalim, even if you're going to go with that Lamdus, it could be that Akum Eino Kona Maskin Mi Yisrael, but Yisrael Kona Maskin Mi Yisrael. Mi Akum. Yeah, so you can go both routes on this. There are two tracks to understand this analysis. What the Gra says there, kind of like Shitasa, is that it's not enough to have shame Akum Alav. You need Akum to own it. And since he's not actually Kona it, so the fact that it's Nikra Shmo Alav, even if the Jew might have, it looks like he intended to keep it there, it's not enough. Good. She'ela though is not enough. If the Jew borrows the kli from the non-Jew, so in the language of the hashkafic idea that Rishonim develop, it's not nichnas lekedushas Yisrael, so it doesn't require tefillah. So the Darkei Tshuva quotes from some of the achronim, and you're going to use it? You're going to use a goyish kli, not without kedusha? So, you're not chayiv to be tovelit, you know, without a bracha, it's yos kalim, but of course you should be tovelit. But the achroinim point out, that's maybe a nice idea, but that's not the halacha. The Shulchan Aruch didn't say that, no one ever said that. If you borrow a kli from an akum, you're not chayiv. So it's a hashkafic question, why you're not chayiv? How come you can eat it, you know, out of goyish kalim? So why are you realizing on that all the time, at the dinner? I assume, I may be making this up, they go to the Hilton, whatever, and they have Hilton Kalim. That's not, that's, they're kashering it, obviously. And do they take it to the mikvah? I assume not, because they're borrowing it from the Hilton. So, they don't have to be told it. We sometimes rely on that, it's pointed out by the Shulchan Aruch, the end of Kuf Chaf, when you're stuck on Shabbos, so you don't have a mikvah around, so you give it to a guy, and you borrow it in the interim. And then when things clear up, so you give the guy to give it back to you as a matana, and then you can be told it. Of course, once he gives it back to you, so then you can be told it with a bracha. But the fact that you borrowed it from him originally is not a problem. It's quite a story of Aaron Soloveitchik. He once got stuck right before Shabbos. So he bought some pots from Walmart or whatever right before Shabbos. So he carefully explained to the clerk, I am not buying this from you. This remains the property of Walmart. I am just borrowing this. Whatever you say, Rabbi. Okay, so that was in order to get out of the Chiyuv of Tzvios Kalim. The Taz points out that should only be used in the short term. Because in the long term, we already saw from Mashkin that if it begins to look like a Jewish kli, and he quotes a parallel by Tzitzis, that after 30 days, it already looks like yours. So you shouldn't use this long term. So that taz is certainly followed most of the time. But some poskim rely on long-term borrowing when there's no way out. So some poskim rely on it for electric kalim, some poskim rely on it for caterers that can't take 2,000 kalim to the mikvah. Of course, can't is a relative term. But there are some achrayim who mitzadeh that maybe b'shas adchak you could rely on that even long term to give it to a goy b'matana and borrow it from him. Okay, as we mentioned, borrowing is not chayiv. But if one Jew buys it and another Jew borrows it, so then kvar nischayiv b'yad harishin. It's a whole lumdus. Why that should be, it's actually a psak of Tais based on the Rashbam, but that's the psak. Sif ches namechaber, a Jew buys it, another Jew borrows it, the second Jew is chayiv. However, this, now the fireworks begin. If the first Jew bought it for the purpose of using as a kli seuda, whether he did get around to it or he didn't get around to it yet, but he intends to use it as a food kli, and then a Jew borrows it temporarily, the second Jew is chayiv to be tovel it. But if the first Jew never bought it to be a food kli, he bought it to be a scissors, whatever, what the Shulchan Aruch speaks of, lachtoch klofim, he's going to use it as a utility knife. So then it was never nischayev biyad arishin, because it never became a kli suda yet. And therefore, if the second Jew borrows it, so the second Jew, says the Mechaber, in the name of Yesh Misha Oimer, is pater from tefillah totally. The Taz and the Shach quote from the Yisuv Heter, that says, not good, it's incorrect. Because even the first Jew, if he wanted to use it even once for Seuda, he would be chayiv to be tovel it. So to say it never became a kliya chayiv betvila is incorrect, and therefore you should at least be tovel it b'li bracha. And that is the psak of the Taz and the Shach. Interestingly, that's not quoted by the Mechaber Ramah, but the Taz and the Shach seem to override. So again, they say that if the first Jew is using it as a utility knife and the second Jew used it to borrow, so then you should be tovel it without a bracha. So now, the Shach and the Taz quote at the Beis Yosef quoted a further kula, that if the first Jew didn't buy it to use a utility knife, he bought it to use for business. What does that mean? He's a houseware store. Or he's in the rental business. He rents kelim, or he sells kelim. But he didn't use it to actually eat on. And then some other Jew borrows it from him. So the Beis Yosef says that according to the lenient opinion, that second Jew would not need tefillah either, because it never became a kli seuda biyad harishon. So along comes further achrayim, quoted by the Darkei Tshuva, a great grandson of the Chassam Sofer, Shevet Sofer, and other achrayim, that a caterer is the same idea. It's not a houseware store who's lending it to somebody, but it's someone who's using it for seuda, but not his seuda, paying customers seuda. So that's also called kli schayra and not kli seuda, and would also be potter. So Rabbi Shechter called that a kula al gabe kula al gabe kula, because it's built on many, many layers here. The Taz and the Shach reject the whole thing from the Yitzvah Heter. The Beis Yosef, even if you grant that kula, extended it over to a houseware store that someone are borrowing from. Later, Achroinim extended it to a caterer. So many Achroinim said, Ad kan, that's too much. So there's a machlokis amongst kashrus organizations whether they require tefillas kelim on their restaurants and catering establishments that are owned by Jews. Some are machmir, I think that's the policy of the OU, and some are mekel. I think I know the kashrus organization is mekel, but since I didn't verify, I don't want to put it on tape. Okay. So Rabbi Tendler, in his very inimitable way, pointed out that don't eat from this hashgacha there, because you should know, no tefillas kelim. He wasn't passing the whole Ashkocha. He was just saying you're going to eat in their restaurant, so you should know you're eating a non-tayvot kelim.
But Stam Leheter, please, for everyone's masa
too? No. Because the Taz and the Shach gunned it down right away, even by the situation with a utility knife. And the extension of the Beis Yosef to Kli Schayra, that's some...
Not two people. Say
the houseware store is not chayav to be tovel it. Right. Bottom line is, he's not using it as a Kli Suda. Pragmatically, even. So based on this, even if you reject this whole lamdus, but there's a chumrah that Rabbi Shechter seems to say is not required, but a lot of the Svarim quoted, Shlomo Zalman and others, the Sefer Tevilas Kelim quotes the name of Shlomo Zalman, that when you go to a houseware store, a Jewish houseware store, again, they're getting kelim from non-Jews, right? So, and you want to use their mikveh, which they sometimes have there in Jewish neighborhoods, such as Garden Hills, whatever. So the houseware store man will tell you, first pay for it, then be tovel it. And that's just not pragmatically, because in case it breaks, he wants it to be on your head, but also halachically, as Mr. Goldberger pointed out to me from a Town Variety. Because for me, it's a kli schayra. I'm not chayav tefillas kelim. So you're going to be tovel it before it became a kli suda. It's not going to work. So first buy it, then you get into whole lamdus, whether you need a kesef, a mashiach, agbah, okay, a check, you know, the rice, the rabbanon, and then dip it into the mikvah, because now it became a kli suda. So I spoke to Rabbi Shechter about it. He thought that was a little too much. But they quote that it didn't become a kli suda until you bought it. Yeah.
Why is that too much?
I don't know. I thought that part everyone agreed with, that to say that if I borrowed from him, that it's so, his business is to sell to me as a kli suda. So it's already called Neschaya B'yad HaRishon, but at least to the extent if I'm going to borrow it and use it. But Kolzman, it's in his Rishus, that it's not yet, okay, I don't know, yeah.
There's some places, like when you buy for a wedding, it's not on a list, they offer you the Tovel in advance.
Yes, Rav Shlomo Zalman even went so far as to say that you should not be Tovel a gift that you're going to give somebody, because for you it's not a Kli Suda. I don't know whether, you know, we could perhaps distinguish. Is that the exact same lumdus as the houseware store? If you're going to make all day, you can make all there or not. Rav Shlomo Zalman himself says no. He says, don't do anybody a favor. Say, it comes untoveled. Because maybe if it's pre-toveled, maybe a bracha is a bracha of Atala, and it'll have to be toveled anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Rabbi Simon, in the Yardei, he pointed out, based on the Beis Yosef, that until you make the kinyan, it's not yours, and the owner cannot make.
Right, so that's basically with the Kli Schayra, right. I think Rabbi Shechter was going with the approach that he rejected this whole idea. The houseware still doesn't have to be tovel because they're not using it. But it's already nischayev beyond a reason to the extent that if they theoretically would use it, it's chayev. So it's already called kli suda. So whether you dip it on their bilus or on your bilus, it doesn't matter. So, but the Beis Yosef was makel that if you borrow it from him, you are not chayev. He's obviously assuming that kli suda is a very unique label,
right,
and it's not,
and
it's not
called kli
suda.
Would not allow the tefillah, store owner,
right, to be tovel. That would be a corollary, correct? Yeah. Right. Right, so that
says the same thing, but
that
they're putting their
that that might be better. Okay, but in packages.
No, it was something that, like, let's say cooking or whatever.
Okay.
It was put in
with foil, without foil.
No, straight.
Straight. They put cake on the glass. No plastic bag. Because
right.
The minute it's a plastic bag, that gets involved in that aluminum foil shiloh, right? That's why I'm... okay. Because they used it. They had, unless you're going to go with the catering cooler, right? But L'chara, that's better.
No, but they're
okay.
Not using the Kaylee for that.
But they're using the Kli as a...
As a candy store, they always have those
So maybe you'll say it's not a Kli Suda because it's just a Kli Hagosha. Okay, I don't know. It's a further question. Okay, one more significant shaila I want to discuss, and then we'll conclude. And this is the question of Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli. Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli. Rabbi Neuberg discussed it a little bit. I'm a little confused about who said what in the Chabur. He was quoting a lot from the Chuvos von Hoggis. I was a little confused because I thought a lot was in the Ramah. So I gotta take a look at that again. I'm just gonna. My vantage point is just gonna. The starting point is gonna be the Mechaber Ramah. So the Mechaber paskins that even if you hold Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli in Choshen Mishpat in Hilchas Kiddushin, but it's not relevant to Tevilas Kelim. So using the Groz criteria, we understand here because Uman Koine. Again, what does that mean? I have a Jewish Kli, and I was already toivel it, or it was made by a Jew, and then I need a repair. I give it to a non-Jew. And he repairs it. So he was mixes koina. So in terms of Tfilas Kalim, that's not enough. Either because he doesn't have full ownership or because it's not Shmo Alav. So it's not Nichnas Latumas Akum Al Yidei Uman Koina B'Shvach Kli. This is the Psak of the Mechaber. And vice versa too. It would mean that if you are a Jewish Uman and you made a Kli for a Goy, and then you said, oh, that's a nice Kli, I want to buy it from you, before you gave it to the back. So then you would only need Tvila Misafik. According to the Mechaber, you would need Tvila with a Bracha, right? Because in the reverse case, the fact that you were already Uman Koina is irrelevant. It's the Pesach and Mechaber. The Ramah quotes a Chumra opinion, and therefore he paskins Halach L'maisa L'Chumra on this question. That you're Tovah without a Bracha. So what does that mean practically? That means if you're a goy, if you give it to a goyish uman and get it back, you got to be tovel without a bracha. And if you're a Jewish uman who made a kli for a goy and decided to buy it, then you also have to be tovel it, but without a bracha, because maybe it already was yours from beforehand. Al pi halacha. So the Chachma Sadam writes halacha lemaisa. Therefore, so if you have a huta, which I'm assuming means a factory, and you're a Jew, and you have goyish workers. So this is the shayla of Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli. And therefore, even though you're a Jewish factory owner, you got to be tovel those kelim b'li bracha. So Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Aruch HaShulchan say, what? But the goyim are not apolim, they're not umanim. You say Uman Koine B'Shvach Kli, that's what you're getting paid by the job. But if you're getting paid by the hour, so then there's no kinyan at all. So there are two attitudes to this Chochma Sadam. The Aruch HaShulchan says he's wrong. And Rav Moshe Feinstein said he meant in a case where we're dealing with umanim. But if you're dealing with polim, it's not a shaila. And that's the psak, halach lemaisa. Whether that's the chachmasada meant or it's not what he meant. If you have a Jewish factory with goyish workers and they're paid by the hour, they do not affect the status of the kli and it does not need tefillah. So if even if Hatzorfim in Eretz Yisrael, that's the biggest Kiddush cup maker, they didn't ship that out to China yet, maybe silver lining is in China, silver plated, but the regular silver, Hatzorfim is the biggest merchant of it. That's why most of the time you don't have to be tovel Kiddush cups. You've got to do research on that, but you got to check. Even if all the workers are Arab, still not chayiv. That's the Psak L'maisa. Sorry? Tzchir is the same as Sheila, even though the Radvaz holds not the way, but Lalach is the same. So if you look in the Pitzchei Tshuva, the Chochmas Adam, even assuming he's talking about Amonim, it's a very curious psak. It's pointed out by the Sefer Tevil's Kalim that Lechora we cannot accept. He says the following. Let's say you're a Goy, and you own a factory, and you have Jewish workers. So, and they're Amonim. So he says, so since it's Uman Kanim Shvach Klish, so you should only be Tovel those Kalim without a bracha, if you buy from such a factory. So the later Achronim said it doesn't make any sense, because Naniach Uman Kanim Shvach Klish. So the Jewish factory workers were kind a little bit. But they didn't buy it. They gave it back to the factory owner. So now it's totally the factory owners. And then he sells it to the Jews. So of course it's chayiv with a bracha. So that one line of the Chachma Sadam, then the later Achronim mafakbek on for another reason as well. Okay, halach lemaisa, those interested, I'll tell you the lumdus on this. But I thought that Uman Kainim B'Shvach Kli is a halacha that's live and well B'Zman HaZeh too, even though it's a whole fancy lumdus. Notwithstanding the fact that the Chazon Ish says that Uman Kainim B'Shvach Kli is going to depend on Dina L'Machus HaDina. If the Dina L'Machus HaDina is Uman Kainim B'Shvach Kli, so then you'll have to, this Ramah will be relevant. If the Dina L'Machus HaDina is Ein Uman Kainim B'Shvach Kli, so the whole Ramah is not relevant. So a Rebbe Chaver of mine pointed out that in his view, he thought that Chazon Ish meant that nowadays the halacha of Uman Kainim B'Shvach Kli is not relevant. I thought say exactly the opposite. So anyone's interested in that whole give and take, I can talk to you after. Forgive me, just one other halacha. That's the halacha of Maimid, which is a similar suffix, and also Machlek Zimchab Ramah. You have a halacha in Hilchas Tumah V'Tara. Whether you go by the Iker Kli or the Maimid, right? You have, let's say, a glass Kli, and then it breaks, and you fill in some metal. So does that have a lot of metal, or a lot of glass? So in Shabbos, elsewhere. So the Tor and the Shulchan Aruch Paskin, that's totally irrelevant when it comes to Hilchas Tevilas Kelim. Tevilas Kelim is dependent on the Iker Kli. So just because that which is supporting it is metal, it's not Chayiv. And just because that which is supporting it is not metal, it's still Chayiv, with a bracha. The Maimid is not relevant. However, Shach points out that the Beis Yosef was mistopic about that, because there are some Rishonim who hold that Maimid is relevant for Tevilas Kelim, and therefore Lalacha Yotovel Bli Bracha. So anytime you have kind of funny Kelim with glass on the inside side and metal on the outside, but now if you have, let's say, plastic on the inside, metal on the outside that supports the plastic or some other contraption like that, so Yotovel without a bracha. Good. Adkan. Atzlacha, I'm sorry I went over, but we spent a lot of time on the tefillah stuff.